This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
You feel good?
Yes, yes.
Good.
I feel there's a lot of bright people here. Maybe too bright. Yeah.
It is bright.
Yeah.
Relax. Welcome to The New Yorker. You're killing me here.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go.
Welcome to The New Yorker.
Welcome to The New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. This is a great day on the show. We've got three unique and hilarious people in live interviews from the New Yorker Festival. And starting off, the Emmy Award-winning writer and comedian, Larry David. Now, if you've watched a sitcom in the last quarter century, you've got to know Larry David's work. He was the co-creator of Seinfeld. I think that's the last TV show that everybody watched. And after that, he created a show that a lot of people just couldn't watch because it was too cringe-inducing. The show was Curb Your Enthusiasm, and it was genius, a deadly satire of privileged people and their first world problems. I spoke with Larry David in 2014, and we started at the beginning.
I want to sort of find a way to discuss the whole of Larry's career. And he grew up in Sheepshead Bay in deepest, darkest Brooklyn. This is correct. Son of Rose and Morty David. And we were just as we were coming out, I asked you, did your parents ever go to see you in your early days?
Oh, not once. First of all, I wouldn't let them come. My mother actually wanted me to be a mailman. That was her dream. best case scenario, you know, because, you know, you they have benefits, you always have a job.
Right.
And, you know.
And you started doing comedy right out of school? Or you were just doing kind of this job and that job? You worked as a taxi cab driver,
a limo driver.
Also, bra salesman.
Bra salesman?
Were you good at that?
David, I was good at nothing. There was nothing I could... No, I was not good at it. But I did write a Seinfeld episode about
right.
it. Yeah.
Yes, you did.
And that was true, though, because he did give me a bag of bras and told me to take them home and study them.
To study them.
Yeah, just like I did. I gave that to George on the show.
Yeah. Now, so at what point do you start making a bid for being a performer? Because you seem the unlikeliest at that point person to want to get up on a stage and do this impossibly hard thing of telling jokes and structuring an act and having it go for 15 minutes and killing. I mean, that's a really hard thing to do.
Yes. Yes, it is.
We're just running out of options.
First I took an acting class. I wasn't even considering stand-up, but I thought, all right, maybe acting. So I took an acting class, and I didn't like that very much because I kept having to wait to talk, you know?
You weren't practicing Jewish listening.
Yeah.
Waiting for the other person to shut up.
Wait, okay, come on. I want to go, you know? And I didn't want to be talking to this person. I wanted to be talking to the people who were watching me. So, and then I had a friend who said, you know, you're funny. You should be doing stand-up. So I put something together. I did, like, in Folk City, Gertie's Folk City in the village. They had a hootenanny night where anybody can go up. So I wrote some terrible, awful material. But I got up. And then I went to Gil Hodges Bowling Alley in Brooklyn. They also had a night. I did it there. So that was twice I got up.
How'd you do?
Terribly.
Yeah.
Then I went to Catch a Rising Star, and I did something, and it wasn't half bad. And he said, come back. You could start working out here.
So and so who was around? Who was in the circle of people that you started to meet?
Richard Belzer, Richard Lewis, who became my closest friend. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ed Bluestone, Andy Kaufman, mm-hmm. Elaine Boozler.
And Jerry Seinfeld comes into the picture at what point?
I started in 74, and Jerry came in the picture in 76. And then Jerry and Larry Miller and Paul Reiser, Carol Leifer, they came along then as well.
And Larry, you were doing okay, but Jerry was really starting to take off when you became friends. What point was his career when the two of you sat down, had a cup of coffee, and kicked around the idea of...
That was 1988.
Right. And there's a kind of caricature of what the show was intended to be, a show about nothing. Yeah. What was it really? What was the cup of... really, you talked about it for the length of a cup of coffee? And what was the conversation? What was the show supposed to be about?
The initial seed of it was that we were in a grocery store, and we were talking about the products in the grocery store in the way we did. And we always had funny conversations. And I said, this is what the show should be.
Right.
I would have conversations with him, kind of conversations I never saw on television.
We're going to show a clip from Seinfeld. This one is one in which Jerry has progressed too far in his dating life with a woman to ask her name. He has forgotten her name, but he knows that it rhymes with a female body part.
Now let's try breast. Celeste, cast.
No.
Rest, cest, hest.
Hest? It's not a name.
Well, you should have just asked her.
I know I should have asked her.
Well, what are you going to do now?
I don't know. I can't ask her now. I've already made out with her. Once you make out with a woman, you can't ask her name.
Aretha.
No.
Bovary.
All right, that's enough.
All right, well, you know what you got to do? You got to go through a purse. You know, the credit cards, the driver's license.
Well, how am I going to do that?
When she goes to the bathroom.
Ah, there you are.
Hey.
My date stood me up. Listen, will you guys go to the operation with me?
You asked a date to go to the operation?
Oh, yeah. So come on, what do you say? Huh?
What kind of operation is it?
Splenectomy.
Isn't that where they remove the...
No, don't ruin it for me. I haven't seen it yet. Now, come on, what do you say?
Mulva.
Mulva? Come on, you want to go?
All right. Just let me finish my coffee. I'm going to watch him go slice this fat bastard up.
Yeah. And the girl's name, of course, was... In the end.
Dolores,
yes. Now, this show was an absolute phenomenon, and people didn't know you and your face very well. Was that comfortable for you, or you were dying to get in front of the camera more?
Not dying at all. There's no way I could write the show and then also be on it. It would be impossible. Right. To write the show, be on it, and then write next week's show and the show the week after, couldn't be done. Mm-hmm. Couldn't be done.
The show ends. It is by this time, it is a phenomenal hit, and it's being compared to everything from the Honeymooners to the very best of television. You take some time off, and you conceive an entirely different thing for cable television, Curb Your Enthusiasm, in which you are front and center. Improvisation is much more at play. I want to show a clip from one of my favorite episodes. It's called Kamikaze Bingo. In which Larry is in a Japanese restaurant with Cheryl Hines as his wife and a Japanese guy. And they're talking about this guy's father.
Hey, by the way, my dad and your dad are becoming very friendly in that nursing home.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes.
Is that cute?
Yeah.
It was just his 80th birthday party. We took him to Japan.
No kidding.
Really?
Yes, he hadn't been back since the war. he saw some of his family and some of his military buddies from the Air Force.
Wow.
Yes. What did he do in the war?
He was a pilot.
Really? What kind of a pilot? A
kamikaze pilot.
Wow.
Wouldn't he be dead?
Not all of them died.
I know, a kamikaze pilot kind of implies that, you know, a kamikaze pilot is a pilot who crashed and died, right?
I bet he didn't.
He survived.
Thank goodness for that.
He survived.
Yes.
Here's to, what did you say?
Kampai, yes.
But what happened exactly? Did he try and crash the plane into a ship?
He grazed the ship.
Okay.
All right. He grazed the ship.
Grazed it.
Is that because there was some kind of malfunction with the plane?
It doesn't really matter. He grazed it.
I'm just curious.
And he lived, and...
And he's alive.
And he's alive.
Yeah, but at the last second, what happened? Was he coming down, and all of a sudden he said, you know, Jesus, this is kamikaze business might not be for me. I think maybe I'll go back to base.
Okay.
Something like that? So what happened at the last second there?
I'm uncertain.
You know what's good is the rainbow roll, because it gives you a little bit of everything high.
Are you ready to order?
Yes.
I will have the chicken teriyaki.
Chicken teriyaki.
Chicken.
Chicken.
Chicken. How about you, Yosh? Little chicken?
Just grazed it. What I love about that scene, in addition to the obvious, is Cheryl Hines. She is attuned to the social conventions. She has a superego that quashes the id of wanting to know every last fact, every last embarrassing fact.
You know, Curb is more about, just like that scene, all the things that we think about that we can't say.
Yeah.
All the things that I think about in my life.
And generally do say.
No, I don't.
You don't.
I don't. That's why I love doing this show so much. Because I'm normal, you know.
Right.
I'm not like him, mm-hmm. you know. I would love to be like him. But I'll get beat up and, you know, that's so, he's a sociopath,
yeah.
you know. But that's me, really. If I'm thinking that, and I want to say that, but I can't,
so the show is the silent voice of Larry David brought to the surface.
Yes, yes. I like to take the small things and make them big, and I like to take the big things, like disease and death and things like that, mm-hmm. and make them small, you know.
Because why the latter?
Because if you take them seriously, you can't joke about it. You know, we all have thoughts that we're not saying. And if we say them, people will identify with it. I think that way, too.
Right. Part of the job is to go too far enough, to push the boundaries, to make people uncomfortable, to make people laugh, but also to make them squirm a little bit.
Okay, you know what? I never knew about
the squirming
stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do the show, and it's on the air, and all of a sudden, people start coming up to me and say, I had to leave the room. I couldn't watch that scene. I go, really? You know? And then I kept hearing it over and over again. People were closing their eyes. You know, they couldn't look at it because I was making them so uncomfortable. It never occurred to me that anything I was doing
ever
could ever make anybody uncomfortable. I could see it offending someone.
Yeah.
Which, as S.J. Perlman said, the office of humor is to offend.
Right.
So I don't mind that. I welcome it. You know, everybody can't like it. So but the squirming part, I had no idea about that.
When have you ever offended? When have you felt sort of out there, oh, this one pushed the outer limits?
Well, the Survivor episode.
You should explain a little bit.
Well, there's a show on CBS called The Survivor, a reality show. And then there are Holocaust survivors. And one day, I heard Survivor, and then I thought Survivor, and I went, holy s***. And, you know, my head exploded over how funny that could be. And I thought, I have got to write this and film it as fast as I possibly can because somebody's going to come up with this idea. It's just so obvious. Survivor, Survivor. How can nobody have done this, you know?
And what was the outcome? Did you get endless letters? We got
a lot. You know, it's amazing.
And did that upset you? Did it secretly please you?
No, it didn't upset me at all, no. Not in the slightest.
Not even a little?
No, not even a little.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Is there anything off limits for you? You ever sort of have that inner Larry David voice and say to yourself, no, not that?
I'm sure, but...
You want to fess up to anything?
I think you could do anything, if depending on how you handle it.
Right. And you have other people take a look, and when you're dealing with sensitive stuff, whether it's about religion or race or gender or anything like that, is there a restraining mechanism that you ever use, human or otherwise?
Well, Jerry was a big restraining mechanism for me.
He was the superego of the show.
Jerry, yeah. He said, no, we can't do that. You know, that's why I never pitched the contest to him.
He was more conservative.
Jerry, yeah. Yeah, but he did surprise me, like a lot more. As we started to do the show, he was right on board with most everything. I thought he was more conservative than he wound up being, but he really wasn't at all.
You know, we watch lots of stand-up people, and we learned it's an extended golden age of stand-up, but it seems like such an immensely complicated world. It seems like it has its real darkness.
First of all, when I did it, there was nothing else that I could have done in my life. I mean, that was it. If I didn't succeed at this, I would bomb frequently. And then I would go home, I would buy a pint of Haagen-Dazs at Smiler's at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would sit and I was, it's so depressing, you bomb, because this is it. If you can't do this, what else? That's it, you can't.
But you weren't a drinking guy or a drug guy?
No,
no. None of that?
No, no, I wasn't. But it's a very close-knit community, and... we feel... Look, I'm going to do it again. There's no doubt, because it's an amazing feeling just being on stage making people laugh.
Yeah.
You find your the best aspect of your personality, the person you want to be, the person you love, a person you love comes out of you.
Huh.
As opposed to the guy you can't stand throughout the day. Yeah.
yeah. Writer and comedian Larry David joined me on stage at the New Yorker Festival in 2014.